Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Thank you so much for tuning in. Henrik here, Red Eyes TV. It's great to have you with us wherever you're joining us from and whatever platform you're joining us on, of course, because we are not on YouTube anymore. I have a little bit of more info for you about that at the end of the show. Regardless, BitChute, Facebook, maybe Twitter, and DLive will live stream the show there as well, or maybe just through our websites, redeyes.tv or redeyesmembers.com. But today, we have a great show lined up for you. Guy I've been listening to for a while, Dick Masterson. He has a show called The Dick Show. And I wanted to bring him on today because he has been kicked off, I guess you could say, from two different banks. And, of course, I have as well, personally, and my business, my media company as well. So I kind of know how that feels a little bit, Dick. But welcome to the show.
Welcome to the party, pal. How you doing?
Yeah, very good.
it's like getting dumped by a girlfriend who also has all of your money. Getting kicked out of a bank. It's a horrible feeling.
Has something like that ever happened before to you?
No, I mean, I started on the internet with menarebetterthanwomen.com, just this stupid satirical website about men and women and kind of a send up of the rise of feminism that was happening about 10 years ago, which makes everything that's happening now, which looks quaint in comparison to everything that's happening now. Go back 10 years ago to see what people were arguing about in the culture war online, and it looks like a joke compared to now. It looks so even tempered. But I started doing the site then, just wanting to be a comedian, and that was when the deplatforming started. Even all the way back in 2005, 2006, your host would just send you an email saying we're not carrying your site anymore. Here's a zip file of all your shit. Go find hosting somewhere else. So I've grown from that humble beginnings of host deplatformings, and now the bank doesn't want to do business anymore with me, which is kind of prohibitive from, you know, running a business online or at least surviving.
Living, yeah, exactly. If you kind of need it for living, could be good. Good thing to have.
Yeah. The bank will take my money for my mortgage, but they won't let me take money for entertaining people with comedy.
And the government will take your tax money, but they won't protect you in terms of how you can receive and deal and wheel with money, right?
It's crazy. Yeah. Well, how did you get knocked off? What did your bank do to you?
So we still don't know. This was a decision from higher up. We got a letter one day, and it says, you know, because there's all these accusations, right? As soon as you go into territory where you say, you know, actually, we think it's a bad idea to flood Europe with millions of Muslims, and we kind of want to make sure that our kids don't grow up as a minority in our own country, right? Mm-hmm. That turns you into a Nazi and a white supremacist these days. So there's these pressure groups that go around and try to get you deplatformed from every possible thing, right? And we've been kicked off of, again, I don't want to make this about me here, but yeah. I can't even count, like Venmo, PayPal, Wells Fargo, Streamlabs, YouTube now, of course, iTunes, yeah. All these, like TuneIn. It's like the bizarre, like there's a whole list of things. And it's like, I would love if one of these companies could show me like what the actual accusations are. Like what's the charge, right? And can I defend myself against that and say, come with my side of the story? But none of that has happened, right? How about you in your case?
So this is, I mean, I just got off the phone with Chase, and and by the way, I know Chase is the devil I've known forever, but I had a backup account at Bank of America, which was supposed to be, they were supposed to be a little bit more accepting of like ideals of freedom that we have in America. But
yeah.
Bank of America killed my account last week, my backup account. Chase killed this account and a backup account in the same week. Big coincidence? I don't know. But I know my accuser, my assassin, my financial assassin in this case was Discover Card, which is the most upsetting part of all of it, because the world does not need Discover Card. Nobody ever looked in their wallet and said, "Oh wow, I'm missing my Discover Card. My life is over. I can't." You know what I mean? Like, it's Discover Card is what my mom had back when I was a teenager. It's a joke of a card, like Diners Club or like I'd rather have a Robinson's May credit card in my wallet than a Discover Card. But they're the ones who told Chase to shut my account down, and Chase just did.
Why? What did they have?
I don't know.
Hold on, over you.
The guy on the phone says, "You can understand how this puts us in a difficult spot," and I'm like, "Not really. If Discover Card told me how to run my business, I'd tell them to go kick rocks or pound sand in the eye of their cock. You're Chase Bank. Why do you care what Discover Card says to do, of all people?
Right.
Visa, I'd understand, but Discover? Get the hell out of here with that.
So what happened was that you said it was a slip up, right, on the part of the first person that you spoke to at Chase.
Yeah, and the second guy that I just talked to, when I started using words like damages, which I know is a legal term, because I just got out of a half a billion dollar lawsuit that took all of last year.
Half a billion. That's funny. That's comedy
in
itself.
That's entertainment. That's a story all on its own.
Is it the medics? I mean, I haven't followed that whole thing. Nook and cranny of that story, but cranny. That's what it was, right?
There's a lot of dirty orifices to explore in that tale. The Maddox lawsuit saga. That took about a year. Maddox and his lawyer are incompetent and stupid, so they screwed up the lawsuit and ended up suing for $500 million instead of $20 million, like I assume they intended to. But anyway, you start throwing out terms like damages and consulting, and all of a sudden, like, okay, we need to get you up. We need to get you up the chain. All of a sudden, you have our white gloves. All of a sudden, we care. All of a sudden, we care about your complaint, and we want to actually read the contract and make sure we're not fucking you over, which they clearly are.
No. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think now I've heard others talk about this too, and the fact that it's a shame to call it responsibility because it really isn't, but more blame could be put on banks after 9/11, after the Patriot Act, right? And I think I saw a tweet of you talking about that too.
Yeah.
They can be held liable now. So banks are very picky. They're scared of, like, you know, terrorism and stuff, and people can essentially approach a bank and say, well, you have XYZ at your bank or something. You better deal with that or we'll sue you, right? What do you know about that?
It's this whole thing, I think, has been a learning experience definitely for me, and I hope for anybody who listens to the show, which is why I try to be very open and transparent about both my failures in it and the things that I think were kind of unavoidable or big surprise to everybody. Among the things that I think everybody's learned through all this is just how fucked our banking regulations and FDIC insurance regulations are for the American ideals in our financial system. Starting with the Patriot Act, which makes banks liable for fraud committed in the gains of the funds that are used to deposit in the bank. It essentially puts the onus of guarding against terrorism and fraud on our banks,
right,
instead of on, you know, something that the FBI cannot control, cannot protect us from. We're supposed to trust the banks with it, which is just mind-blowingly stupid and backwards to me. Like, if the police can't stop it, there's no way a bank should be able to stop it. You know, we have a court system to protect against stuff like this. We built this entire court system to service the ideals of justice. We do not rely on the banking system for this. That is the right. Last people we want in charge of it.
Yeah.
Starting with the Patriot Act and going through Operation Choke Point, which was, I think, Obama's overt operation to prevent retailers of guns and hate speech, quote unquote, hate speech from using the financial system to stay in business, which is this big quagmire that our banks cannot cope with. And I think we're seeing the byproducts of that and stuff like this Chase banning.
So they get very paranoid. And I think, again, whoever it is that's approaching these banks, they can put a lot of pressure, and they know this. They're exploiting that essentially. Right. And I mean, well, the question is, where will it end too? Because it's like, you know, I don't buy the line regarding YouTube and the Googles that all, you know, this is private companies. They can do whatever the hell they want. No, because they have special protection, you know, Section 230, Decency Communications Act.
Yeah.
They get government funds, subsidies. They're built basically by, you know, the people, you know, in the country where they were founded and created, in America in this case, right? So they should, all they should do essentially is to uphold U.S. law, which is you can't call for the violence against someone. Like, duh, everyone gets that. Don't break the law. But otherwise, you know, recognize the First Amendment, And, you know, you could even say, actually recognize the free speech clause that's in the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. It's actually, you know, it's right in there, what you can, what you can and can't do. But these companies won't recognize that. And yet they have the protection of a, they have the protection of a platform, but they're behaving like a publisher, right?
Yeah, it's, I'm totally with you on the, it's a private company, they can do whatever they want meme being, being nonsense, because I cannot, as a private company, pay somebody $2 an hour to mow my lawn. You know, let's just start with the things I cannot do as a private company and start chiseling away at those before we get all the way to the point of private companies. It's legal for private companies to refuse service because of your political ideology, which, by the way, I don't think they can in California.
Right.
You know, good luck suing. I'd rather sue God than Chase Bank, but that's, it's still, it's on the paper as being illegal. It seems like everybody is stuck in this limbo of not wanting to be caught. I'll give banks the benefit of the doubt and just say, look, if you were trying to protect your bank from being an accessory to fraud or terrorism that the government cannot catch, you would be terrified of having to police, of having to over police everything for that. Because if you make one little slip up, of some, you know, if you're driving down the road, you speed, you go over the speed limit whenever you want because you know you're not going to get caught. But what if somebody could stumble on all your driving history and just bust you for speeding at any time? You would be everyone would be driving around terrified of this happening at any point. I think that's the state we're in with the banking system and YouTube and all these big alphabet, all the alphabet companies. I hate to defend them because I do think they perpetrate a lot of evil, but our system encourages them to do so, which is the sad part.
Yeah, it's just, let's put on over responsibility on them and let them deal with these dirty aspects, right? Without realizing that it's like, this is going to be start infringing on people. I mean, again, just look at how the internet has changed that, right? Because now you literally have, you kind of pressure groups from around the world that pinpoints one person that has said a naughty thing online, right? And they just vehemently hammer them and they build profiles on them. They write smear pieces and articles. Whether it's true doesn't matter. They still build their case. It ends up on Wikipedia. They approach what, you know, now they approach a bank. What is it going to be next? Water, electricity, your ability to loan money to buy a home? Where does this stop? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I could easily see that. I guess it's Black Mirror. I think they already did an episode of the social credit score. But every time somebody
makes the
social credit score in China, I think, yeah, we already have it here. Like, the difference is that you don't push your social credit score like some of us do. But believe me, that system is very active.
That was a great episode, by the way, because it demonstrated like what happens when you just go outside of the little playpen.
You
step in the wrong, take a few wrong steps, and then here we go, right? Because now it's like, it's a shaming, credit score system that we have right now, right? If you're politically incorrect, I mean, in your case, was it because you're like anti-feminist, you know, making fun of like, you know, women and stuff? That's enough these days, right? To get your shit shut down, essentially.
I really don't know. I don't know what Discover Card, I mean, Discover Card is the card of fat soccer moms. So it's probably me making fun of fat women too much, but I have no idea what the problem is.
Yeah.
A lot of the people who have been banned on services like PayPal and, Patreon, came over to use my system, New Project 2, which is what caught the merchant services account ban. So it could be any number of these guys who are all just artists. They're just people drawing cartoons, or running websites or making commentary videos. It's all very, it would all be, I don't want to say, I mean, if the climate was different, if the cultural climate was different, these people would not be as, well, they'd be making different art, I assume. They're not militarizing anybody. They're not even doing anything broaching the levels, that free speech should be called into protection for, but there they are. They're banned.
You know, I'm thinking too of, do you remember Hatreon when that was set up?
Mm-hmm.
That whole thing. And I mean, I forget the guy's name. He was actually
Cody Wilson. He called into my show when he made it.
Yeah.
Great
Cody,
idea.
Cody Wilson. That's right. He was great. He was, of course, involved in the 3D printing gun and all that kind of stuff, too. They really went after him. I actually don't even know what happened. Remember last time he was essentially, I believe he was framed for child, underage sex,
yeah.
I believe, to be honest, actually.
That was a rough case.
Yeah.
The girl lied about being, he met her on an 18-plus dating site. I assume it was some kind of an escort.
It was like Sugar Daddy or something.
And it turned out she was 16 and he never knew, but they found out after the fact. It's just
exactly. I mean, it must have been a setup, but why I'm dragging that into the picture is because he did something similar. I think it predates New Project 2, if I'm not mistaken on that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, his was an interesting case. So every time somebody tries to do what should be easy, which is just provide a payment processor, a payment platform for people to accept money from their fans, which in my opinion trumps the First Amendment. Like, the First Amendment is great, say whatever you want, great, say whatever you want against the government, fantastic, but it is so much more important that people have a freedom of commerce to give whomever the money that they have for a service that they want done for them. And this perversion of it, I think, is more important than what anybody has to say, which I only say because all of these platforms that protect your ability to engage in a free system of commerce must support the absolutely worst, the most heinous forms of speech that there are, which Hatreon got punished for because everybody that went onto that platform was, what you'd traditionally call hate speech, white nationalists, all the usual ragtag group of Nazis and white supremacists or whatever you want to call them, in whatever company you're in.
The bad people.
The bad guys.
That's right.
The boogeymen. The guys who keep the History Channel afloat.
That's right. Yeah, the Hitler Channel, you mean.
Yeah. The bad guys on the internet with the Proud Boy haircuts or whoever. Hatreon got shut down by MasterCard. They said specifically, nobody's allowed to do processing for this website because we hate everybody who they're allowing to make money.
Yeah, and no one came out for these people, as far as I know. No one. I don't even know if there's any back end attorneys, lawyers that looked at this and said this is a good case. We need to push back against this because, again, it's like, you know, I know that the majority of people that were on there that are called boogeymen actually aren't. I know in most cases there might be some. I can't defend everyone. I don't even know everyone that was on there. But,
that's not your job. That's the police's job. That's
what makes
me so insane.
Like,
I have never cared what anybody says. I don't need to scream at anybody who has views that are offensive to me. I just want everybody to talk and get it off their chest and let everybody hear their ideas out.
Yeah.
But this idea that that individuals have to police each other's speech is so repugnant to me and such a waste of fucking time. Like, if somebody's a Nazi, you're not going to talk them out of it. You know what I mean?
You're going to financially, it's going to make them not feel like the world is against them, right? It's not going to make them into a fringe, like when they have nothing left to lose, that's not going to be a dangerous situation whatsoever, right?
Yeah. When you're getting called a Nazi all day, every day, you're like, oh, you know, fuck it. Maybe I am one. You win.
It's pathetic, this name calling and stuff. But anyway, that's what the situation is like, right? That's what happened there. And so they, you know, regardless of the slander, the misconstrued stuff that they use to build cases against these people. But again, my point has always been this, that, okay, let's assume that the majority of people out there don't care about these people, or they think that they're these bad people, so they say, fuck it, we don't care. Like, they can do whatever they want, but they can't get paid, they can't use these services or whatever, something like that.
Yeah.
But the question is, where does that end? At what point will the system, as it's comprised of right now, say, you know what, we're fine here. Now, we've banned these people, we've kicked them off, these people can't bank, now we're happy. Like, that's never going to happen. There's always going to be new frontiers and new people that are offensive to these people, right?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I also think pushing these viewpoints to the fringes where, you know, people like, what was it, Laura Loomer can't even use Uber anymore. She can't use Uber Eats or something like that.
Yeah, I showed the Chase article here where she was suspended. Apparently she got that back, by the way, with the help of an attorney or something like that. I don't know the details. I just heard it in passing. But yeah, she's been like, exactly, you can't use Uber or Lyft and stuff like that. I mean, that's there's anti-discrimination laws now, right? You can't even like decide who gets to stay in an Airbnb, for example.
No.
Right. Or you have to bake the cake. What happened with that stuff, right?
Yeah, you have to run my fucking credit cards, too.
Yeah. Although they didn't have to wax the balls.
Didn't have to wax the balls.
In Canada. So it seems a little schizophrenic. We can't really get an answer on this. You have to bake the cake, but not wax the balls. Okay.
I think pushing everybody to the fringe is very dangerous because there's like this feeling of panic and anger when you get pushed out to the outskirts of society and you see people who represent things that you might think getting similarly pushed out. It has a big effect on people's brains. And the fact that the left is always banging the drum of inclusivity and talking about how marginalized communities negatively affect the mindset of people in them, I think they would be especially sensitive to this if they meant what they were talking about. But they're not genuine at the end of the day. They're just in it for themselves.
Very good point. They're cheering this on. They love it. They love the big the big companies, financial institutions, which they traditionally have been, their whole ideology was essentially built on that, right? Of like destroying capitalism and all that stuff. Now we have woke big companies and banks essentially behaving like an SJW, and they're right behind them, lined up and cheering this shit on. Like, yay! You know, it's just like, wow. I didn't think we'd see the day, but here we are, you know?
Me either. I never would have thought that my biggest enemy would be the bank, you know? Like, I got all the customers, I got the code, I got everybody lined up, but the bank is not in the business of money anymore. It's pathetic.
What about Patreon? Do they have anything to do with this? Do they feel threatened by competition?
So here's, you know, the incestuous nature of money and finance and Silicon Valley and venture capital is such that I think a company that has a significant ownership in Visa or is in Visa, one of the big credit cards, also has a significant ownership in the in Patreon through the whatever capital raising, whatever finance rounds they went through at Patreon. I think one of the VC funds owns both them and maybe PayPal. I don't remember who exactly it is.
Interesting.
But we have an ecosystem where the same influence can spread over all of your money-making platforms and just kind of erase you, like back to the like a picture from Back to the Future. Patreon has warned me again this week about some stupid tweet I sent out 3 months ago that it might be a violation of their terms of services, which is scary. It's scary to be in a spot where the backup has been destroyed by shadow forces, shadow financial forces. The plan A, the Patreon, is being threatened by who knows, maybe the same forces or maybe fear of being censored. I assume Patreon has to bend over backwards every day to lick the ass of these credit card companies who are running around like chickens with their heads cut off when it comes to banning and policing. But yeah, it's a permanent state of crisis where your finances are threatened at every moment, but we're all going through it together.
Yeah.
Which is not more comforting, but that's the reality of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's very bizarre. I don't know too much about the inner workings of Patreon. I saw there that they're processing, they say more than $1 billion will be paid out to creators since the company's inception in 2013. I think it said $500 million or something in the coming year?
That sounds right.
Yeah, let me see here. The company is also on track. Yeah, here we go. To pay out $500 million to content creators in 2019. So that's a lot of money. They're a big player in all of this too. So that I wouldn't be surprised if there's anything like that. But again, the pressure is essentially back in the hands of a duopoly, Visa and MasterCard, right? And I've heard scenarios too where you have a merchant account or some kind of secondary or third party, I guess, involved in this. And then Visa MasterCard puts pressure on them. Like, I think this happened with BitChute, and I think it happened with Subscribestar for a little bit as well, if I'm not correct, if I'm correct on that.
Yeah. And I guess it comes down to the processor at the end of the day to either say yay or nay, but everything's in secret, so nobody knows who's saying what at what given time.
This is like free market America, right? People fled from all over the world to come to America to say whatever the hell they want and be able to buy whatever they want or support, I guess, in a way, whoever they want. That's gone. That's gone now. Even under fucking Trump. Sorry for the bad language, but even under Trump, this is gone now.
Oh, is this a no swearing? I'll watch.
Well, no, it's fine. I'll put a little disclaimer in at the beginning. We usually try to keep it a little family friendly.
I'll keep it family friendly.
Don't worry about it. We've crossed the line now, so now it's good. Just keep it coming.
Yeah, it's not. It hasn't gotten better under Trump. The bailout was hated at the time by certain people, by some people, and it should have been hated a lot more. But even with all the problems with the bank bailouts of 2012, I never would have seen it come to something like this, where banks are essentially running a screen for the government. The government could never do this to you. The government couldn't show up at my door with a tank and say, stop making the jokes you're making. Stop letting people like Stone Toss make money. Stop facilitating these transactions for these dissidents to stay alive and stay in business and profit and spread their message. But Chase can do it with an email. That's the corporatocracy that Mussolini was talking about. We're in it where we live in a world where our government is always precipitously teetering towards freedom and control. Right now, I think conservatives, especially Trump conservatives, represent freedom, and the progressive liberal people, a constituency represents control. The U.S. government is always teetering between those two because we've got freedom lovers like you and myself and probably the listeners of the show. And then we've got people who are frightened by freedom and can't survive in it and need to know. They need a cubicle. They need Social Security. They need to know that someone is taking care of them. And not out of love, out of an obligation and out of duty and out of force. Yep. So we're always bouncing back and forth between these two. And of course, naturally, companies are going to fall in line and support one or the other. And we're at a spot now where companies can exert an extraordinary amount of influence over their innate politics and policies. And only the side of control has an incentive to do this, because the more they grow, the more power they get, the more laws they can enact to increase their control. And the side of freedom just doesn't have the same incentives other than a religious compulsion to protect these ideals. And we're seeing that play out in the free market vis-a-vis these gigantic corporations that are taking advantage of the landscape that they've been given by America to pervert it.
Well, exactly. Maybe they could have been formed in other countries, but not to what they have become regardless, right? That's a pretty unique situation in America. And yet, as I said before, yet they stab America in the back, essentially. They don't even uphold its laws, the First Amendment, all these things. They screw that. It doesn't matter. These woke companies have also those. There is a risk with it, because we have seen heavy financial loss when some of these companies go out on a limb and do something absurd, like Gillette with the, like women can shave now, and then the anti-male kind of shit. I mean, that is bad, but it means that they don't care about the bottom line. It's about something else here, feels like.
Yeah, it's fine when they can experiment and fail, and they fail. That is, like, that's the evolution. That's the Darwinian capitalist system. We have everybody trying different things, and bad ideas fail, bad methods fail, bad ideologies fail. But when you come to our banking system, we have not let these bad ideologies fail. We support them. We don't understand them. So they're able to perpetrate all these abuses of power and law in the darkness. And then when we do see it, we can't do anything about them, because our government's set up in such a way where our representatives are celebrities. We've got guys with districts that are a million strong. There's no way to challenge these people, and they're the dumbest people you'll ever meet in your life representing you. So good luck explaining to them what even is the problem with the banking system so that they can take it to Washington.
Yeah.
That's a mess. It's a mess.
I think government laws is way behind the technology and the way that how quickly things are changing now again. I mean, as I said before, and I don't know if I made that point, but it's like you wouldn't be in a situation where hundreds of people who have some sway and are active, like say journalists or, you know, they write pieces that would target someone in a different state even or a different country. This is a bad person and they need to be shut down everywhere. And then the companies are like, of course we don't want to, you know, do business with a bad person. It might reflect badly on us, and they get rid of them and stuff like that. That's a brand new environment that hasn't existed before, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. If this was 100 years ago and your local bank says, no, we're not going to help this guy out, you'd have a mob out there.
Probably, yeah, yeah.
You absolutely are going to help him out. Like, okay, we've reconsidered, done, got it. But you just don't have when your customer service, when the guy answering the door at the bank is on the other side of the earth and you can barely understand him anyway, you think, what is the point of this? This is just a charade. We've got security theater. We've got capitalism theater. It's all, none of the things that are supposed to protect us in this system are working properly.
No, that's right. And so another thing I think, too, that's worth mentioning about all of this is how threatened this system is of individuals who essentially just say things online, right? I mean, sure, some of them organize, some of them do things. They do hold a little bit of influence, some people that they've censored and banned and stuff like that. I mean, we lost 333,000 YouTube subs with the channel gone.
Yeah,
you know, so people like, they wanted to hear what we said, right? They want to hear the shows. They want to listen to the videos. They agreed. It's not some fringe thing where people don't like that every video was downvoted and people think we're morons, the kind of thing, right? So clearly we're over the target, right? I mean, otherwise, why would the system react frenetically and hysterically in the way that it does, whether that's from the banks all the way to social media, right?
I mean, the demoralization aspect cannot be understated or cannot be overstated. In this culture war, whatever you want to call it, losing something like 370,000 or however many you said subscribers is a death knell for most people.
Not for us.
That's it.
Not for us.
And you're like, I quit. Like, I'm enough people statistically will just say, I'm done with this.
Yeah. If they would have built it only on YouTube, I definitely understand it. Luckily, we built our audience outside of YouTube and then jumped on it later. But I get your point. Obviously, it's very, I'm not happy about it. I can't say that. And I'm worried. I have been worried what's going to happen now, obviously. But it's like, you know, YouTube has this policy where like, well, we believe you can build you should build a business and anybody can have a say. Your opinion matters and all that shit. And then like, we literally get no communication from them. Like, well, point where, what video, what part of what video did we do wrong, right? Give us something. You're just cut off. You don't have anything.
They don't care about you. They just want to take the same system that they've been, the same Skinner box system of of addicting individuals to posting content for feedback on their system and apply it to celebrities.
Yeah.
That's all YouTube cares about anymore, is getting Will Smith as addicted to posting videos as your random e-thought who's been serving them well for 10 years. It's the fear that you're talking about of what people will say or what certain individuals will say is pathetic and childish.
It is pathetic, isn't it?
The white nationalist stuff, memes, phrases. I'm half Mexican, so I like, there's no place for me in the white ethno state. I know this. I'd love to talk about it with whoever wants to talk about it, knowing full well that I do not belong there, and I'm okay with it. Like, it doesn't bother me at all to see anybody saying whatever. If you've got My Little Pony fan fiction, if you want to talk about the Fourth Reich and how you're gonna do it step by step, I don't care. It's just words. It's just people's opinions, and I put all of my faith in the law. The laws that we have in the U.S. that stop violations of people's person and property from actually occurring. Otherwise, it's all game. Go for it. Sing it. Make video games about it. Speech it. Have blogs about it. Have secret meetings about it. Upload rants about it on YouTube. I don't care. It doesn't matter. Go for it. If you really think these people are bad and that their ideas are stupid and then that they are stupid, you should celebrate it, because then everyone will get to see how stupid they are. Everyone will get to look at that and say, Richard Spencer's not some kind of a mystical boogeyman. He's just a guy with dumb ideas. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that's what people would be able to say if you just let everybody have their say.
Right.
But it's everybody wants a rigged game. They want the left, the ultra-progressive left, whatever you want to call them, they want the rigged game. They want the security. They want the security in exchange for liberty. And we've been fighting it for hundreds of years. We'll be fighting until the end of time. It's just the way it is. I think they've made a lot of wins lately with these regulations and the and how fast technology is increasing and it, giving them a tighter and tighter control of a greater amount of people. But we will be fighting this fight forever. So anybody who cares, buckle up and get ready. It's not getting any better anytime soon.
No, it isn't. Definitely not. I mean, we're called, you know, white supremacists. You know, it's the same old tired lines, of course. And again, I mean, yes, I'm not anti-European. I'm not anti-white. I'm pro-European. I think Europeans are great. I want to make sure that Europe continues to exist. I want to make sure that the people of various European nations, America included, continue to be in control of their country and their destiny and what they want to have moving forward. I think they should be in control of who comes into the country everywhere. I want everyone to prosper everywhere. Every nation on the earth should have an opportunity to have self-determination and do whatever the hell they want to do, right? That's my position on it. But taking that now, that's a white supremacist position. And they need to silence people like me and in extension people like you, because you also go against, you know, political correctness. You talk about the feminist bullshit. There's a lot of other things you talk about as well. But you don't, if you don't kowtow that line of like, you know, everything that they want, you are a target potentially. And they want to remove you. If you have any sway, if you have people listening to you or your message is, your audience is growing or something like that, they feel so threatened against that you have some of the biggest companies in the world, like YouTube and Google, pinpointing small content creators and going after them to snuff them out. I mean, it's pathetic, isn't it?
It really is. And they're paying for it. I don't know why they have all this extra money to spend on hiring their little Pinkerton squad to go after guys who are eking out a living on their stupid platforms, selling whatever in God's name YouTube sells in the ads that any sane person blocks.
Yeah.
But it's shocking how many resources they're willing to dedicate to go after that kind of speech. It's crazy the amount of times I've been called a Nazi or a white nationalist too, being, you know, not white in the last 2 years. But I'm sure someone is clipping me being on this show, period.
Probably, right? Yeah. It's always guilt by associations. It does, even if you have a conversation with someone, even if you don't agree with them. Do you remember that the alternative influencers report that they were mapping the network of all the different people? Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
Yeah, Data and Society. I mean, it's kind of the classic like boogeyman, right? But they literally get Soros money, they get Bill Gates money, they get New York Times money, Ford Foundation, all these globalist, you know, corporations and stuff, shit behind it. And they were literally like, oh shit, these people are talking with each other. They're cross pollinating their audiences. Interesting conversations are being had in this environment. Literally shut it down. that was the outcome. And YouTube complied, right? That's what they did. They started limiting these people's channels, and so that the audiences just gradually like started to declining. Have you noticed anything like that on your YouTube? Has it been fairly okay?
Well, you know what? I was banned back in 2007. I had a voicemail number for MenAreBetterThanWomen.com. That was my first book. I wrote the book Men Are Better Than Women in 2007. I was on Dr. Phil for it, being a jackass, acting like the world's biggest a-hole. And I would post voicemails that people would send in, usually women just screaming about what a jerk I was for having this website. YouTube started deleting them one day out of nowhere. It was like, oh, this video is inappropriate. This was even before monetization happened. So ever since then, I've more or less given up on the platform. Like, I know I will be banned at any moment. I know eventually they will weed out anyone whose content does not sell ads, because they're an ad company. So the Medicars of the world, the Danculas of the world, anybody with interesting content, anybody that you turned to YouTube for away from television will be banned because they are not advertiser friendly. So I've never put any stake into it. I'm glad I haven't, because it'd be gutting to lose an audience like that.
Yeah, and you know, again, that's why we're lucky that we have, you know, great supporters and stuff like that out there. But we actually built the show outside of that environment. We spoke about a lot of different topics in the beginning. I kind of got into like an anti-globalist, kind of pro-nationalist view later on kind of thing, you know, so we built it there and then got on YouTube. And then eventually, of course, now we've lost that, but I think we'll be able to survive outside of that too. But the point is too that, you know, YouTube is like, it's losing money. Alphabet has a major issue with YouTube. I wonder what they want to do with it. And then at the same time, for them to rework their platform in such a way that if they consider someone to be searching for, like, say, the wrong terms or looking at the wrong videos on YouTube, they want to try to de-radicalize you and pull you off in a different direction and stuff like that. But it's like, if you go on a site and it constantly feeds you stuff that you don't want to see, what's going to be your incentive for staying on that platform?
Yeah, the idea of de-radicalization is kind of this silly to me, too, because that's public school. Like, you spend your entire life, you spend your entire early life, every man spends it in a strict and oppressive matriarchy. You wake up because your mom told you to wake up. You eat what you eat because your mom told you to do it. And then you go to school where six different women tell you what to do and tell you what's wrong with you every day, all day. And that doesn't work. People still come out of that. People come out of that system even more pissed off.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
In the first place. So yeah. I don't think Google, they might have a misplaced faith in their algorithm. If they think they're going to be curing 18 years of oppressive gynocracy in their viewer, it just seems like they're trying to sell more ads, or their advertisers are spooked and they're trying to come up with something to feed more ad money into the machine before they can get the big superstars to get on there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they will probably do something like they will probably try to use all the data that they do have access to on YouTube. And it's the biggest database, I think, in the world in terms of imagine if they release like one of their artificial intelligences or something like that on the platform internally.
Oh, yeah.
Just to study like human behavior and patterns and shit like that. I mean, that's a huge database to have. Just like Google and Facebook makes money on just kind of tracking. It studies human behavior, right? That's ultimately what it does. Trends, patterns. YouTube has that at its disposal. And at some point, companies are probably going to come in and pay for money to extract like certain slices of information from that database and the analytics of that database. That's what I think they hope to use it at in the future, because it's, as I said, it's not making money. They're shooting themselves in the foot. They want to push out any interesting content, which means if a competitor shows up now that says, all right, we're going to uphold U.S. law, First Amendment rules here. It's not neither right nor left. It's just like free speech is the issue here. That would be a platform which I think could grow to an immensely big platform within just a couple of years, frankly, if they would allow the political discourse to take place, you know?
Yeah, I hope BitChute does it. I mean, I think we're all looking at BitChute to be Superman in this case.
Yeah.
I know a lot of guys are on DLive, but BitChute seems to have a long track record of hosting an ungodly amount of that content. It's not the best. It's slow a lot of times. It doesn't work. But, I really hope they're able to pull out of this with an actual competitor to YouTube.
Yeah, I agree. And again, it might not be BitChute. I hope it is. I hope they can get some advertisement. I hope they can get some supporters. And of course, people out there kind of watching and monitoring all of this should support BitChute. They should go over there and subscribe to people's channels there. Because again, as happened to us, one day you're gone and that's it. You know, you don't know how to reach these people if a YouTube channel is all you got. One of the things I want to ask you about last year too.
Sure.
What do you make about this then? You look white to me, as
yeah,
they say.
Yeah.
But what do you make of all this anti-white just like hysteria that's going on right now in the States with like these, you know, you can't even say that it's okay to be white anymore in America. It's like the default position is you have to be guilty and it's not okay. Like, what do you make of all that?
I mean, it's because white people are pussies and they'll put up with it. Like, that's why nobody doesn't say the N-word because it's like, this is how they say it. Look around. Like they're afraid. They're afraid. Nobody's afraid to say shit about white people, which is good. I think it's good, but, I think white people are so terrified of looking proud of anything. It's like their affect is to be too proud of something or too proud of their heritage or their even their race and to downplay it as much as possible. It is a form of, it's almost like a form of ascetic fashion. Like you have the tiny house people who want to downsize everything, the minimalist people who want to have no comforts. And then you have a lot of white people who want to have no joy in who they are. And it's sad because it's part of you. It's your DNA. It's something you should be proud of. I'm cut right in two. I got white in one half and Mexican on the other half. And I'm proud of the accomplishments and the culture of both. But I think white people just can't do it. They just can't let themselves do it. And it's a shame because you should be proud of everything that you are. There's a difference between pride and aggression. There's a fine line between pride and supremacy. And I think white people are so afraid of veering into the supremacy one that they want to stay all the way on the other side of the world.
I thought Obama was supposed to fix all this when he got elected, right? 2008 was it? He got in first.
You know what? I saw the night after that election, I was at the gym and I saw this old Jewish guy walk up to a giant black guy who was lifting weights and say, just out of nowhere, say, "Hey, that was a hell of an election last night." And the black guy looked up at me and we made eye contact for a second and just made this like, "What the fuck is this guy talking about?" Like, what do you mean? Why are you walking? First of all, why are you bothering a guy when he's working out? This is not a book club where you're here to share your opinions. We're here to work out and then go home. But secondly, like, why do you feel the need to share this moment that you clearly experienced with a guy who did not? It was a bizarre experience. I think a lot of white people have been stalling out in their brains on that for 10 years or 11 years.
Yeah. Then Trump got in as a payback for that or whatever you want to call
it.
Yeah. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think about it? What do you think this it's not okay to be white shit is?
I think it's just hysterical. I think it's mania. I think white people are being targeted and discriminated against in a way that we've never seen before. It's incentivized by the media. The whole apparatus is essentially now in its attempt to try to. I see it as a perceived injustice, right? All people have done bad things historically. Everybody enslaved someone else. Everyone warred. We all know this, right? But so right now, whites are the boogeyman.
We're currently enslaving people. Like,
exactly. Right, exactly. It's still going on in like sub-Saharan Africa, like Libya, like today, literally.
And in prison. U.S. prisons. We're still, it's like, this is intolerable conditions. These guys are, this is not fair. This is not right. But I'm sorry. Go.
No. So that perceived injustice, there's that needs to be leveled out according to make it fair, right? You have to, it's not that, that just that then you can take, based on that perceived injustice, take whatever marginalized group that you see to lift them up. What's happening is then actively need to hold down white people, right? While they're lifting them up to like restabilize this. And again, in the effort to do that, you have a lot of white people that wake up to their own identity and they say, what the fuck is this? Like, I haven't done anything wrong. I'm not a bad person, right? But I'm being treated as such. There's disincentives against me just because I'm white or a white male specifically, like a straight white male is the most, hated but they can't get jobs. There's literally like, employment opportunities out there now that says like no whites need to apply and shit. I mean, if you take whatever is happening right now to white guys specifically and put the same pressures on any other group, there would be like worldwide news coverage and outrage about this if it happened in a country, you know?
And it makes pushing people who want to say that to the fringes that much more dangerous. Because that's where the magic happens. That's where the riots become incipient. That's where people who are desperate and feel like they have nothing to lose will act like people who are desperate with nothing to lose. It's 100% true. I have my real last name is Mexican. I believe that has helped me more than hurt me. I don't think that's ever hurt me in my life. I think it has only helped me, and that is not fair. Because I'm the same person. It was 50-50 whether I get a Mexican last name or not. And I think having one has only helped me in life to the disadvantages of others. I feel the same way about, I got nephews and their dad has a white last name. And when my sister got married to this white guy, it was a joke whether or not they would just take her last name because it's Mexican and because it would benefit the kids. It was a joke, but it was also kind of real. I was like,
so they knew, no. They knew that, see?
Oh yeah.
There's an underlying like realization about the things that's going on then, in other words, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
Interesting.
It's a shame, and it's propagated by these systems that we're currently fighting right now, like the banks and schools.
Yeah. And again, I think that's an important point, and what you mentioned as well, in the sense that if you do drive people to a point where they can't be heard, or even, you know, we have discussions within society that are like, well, everyone's voice matters, and we need to take everyone's concerns seriously and shit like that, right? And then you have a white person that shows up, like, hey, there's literally population replacement going on right now. There's organizations like the SPLC that literally is like have monitoring the percentages of how the white population has declined, both in America over the decades and various European countries. Did you see those screenshots, by the way?
Which one?
From the SPLC, Mark Potok. On his wall, they had a documentary on his wall behind him. He had mapping of how the white population in America has diminished over decades in America. Like it's a great progress. The whites are becoming fewer and fewer, right?
That sounds like something that I have seen before, what they would have on the wall. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, as you have an environment of those kinds of things, young white people that are like becoming a minority in certain areas and stuff, and they're actually mistreated because they're white and all this shit starts happening to them. By saying that their concerns are not valid, by silencing them, by saying, no, this is not true. It's a conspiracy theory that there is a replacement population agenda kind of being driven here, right? Then you are literally pushing them over the edge and making these individuals very, very dangerous, right? And at the same time, then when that happens, they utilize that as more proof of saying, see, we need to control you. We need to put a leash on you and shit like that. It's a feedback loop, right?
It seems so childish to me that there wouldn't be, you call it whatever you want, replacement or what, but it's just simple demographics. Like Mexicans vote Democrat in general. So, of course, they want more. Like this is, and it was a great system for a long time because the Democrats got more votes and the crony Republicans got slave labor, which is what it is, which is what illegal immigration is. Those guys sign up for fake social security numbers. They pay into the system. They never get anything back and they will work for nothing and they can't complain. They can't unionize. They can't even fight for the rights that they are already owed because they're here illegally. So it's just a class of slave labor. It worked perfectly before Trump because both sides were benefiting from it. But now all of a sudden that Trump is the fly in the ointment, we've got all these new Nazis all over America.
Oh, it's everywhere. Nazis everywhere, right? And then of course they're not creating them by having shit like this going on. Look at the screen. If you haven't seen this before. So SPLC, obviously, I think you know about them, right? They're anti-hate organized. They literally make money peddling hate and stuff like that, right? But here's a screenshot from a documentary that was on Netflix, and you can see non-Hispanic whites proportion of U.S. population. They're measuring from 1920 to 2015, and you can see that there is a declining rate, right? In other words, they're mapping this shit. They think that this is great. This is an agenda for these people. And then we come along and say, look at this shit, what they're doing here. Why is this good then? What has this got to do with anything? Oh, you need to be censored. This is a conspiracy theory. They even did it in Europe. Look at this. Here's a second one here where
they wrote it by hand too. That person really wanted that chart.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Get out.
There's one here from, this is the one, I guess, from Europe here. It's redirecting me for some reason when I click in on that image. But regardless, you get the idea here of what's going on.
It's a wild thing to want to track or to celebrate. Like, why is this so important? This is such an odd measure of quality of life. How many white people are in the country to celebrate the decline of that over anything else is very deranged.
So, you know, people like me, my point is, hey, what's going on here? We talk about this kind of stuff and bring attention to it. This, among other things, of course, there's a lot of groups, a lot of people that suffer from globalization overall, right? And just what the elites are doing to us. And over our heads, we can't take part in the democratic process and all that shit. But regardless, we map and trace this. But then we are the hateful ones for talking about this kind of stuff and pointing this out. And they're saying that we are contributing to like, we're encouraging violence by like showing things like this and talking about what people actually are saying. So I think it's all upside down. I think these people are cuckoo, but they know what they're doing. But they're evil in the sense that they're denying it. We can lift out things and say, hey, look, what the hell is this? And talk about the news, analyze it, and then you say, hey, we think this is wrong. And then they go around and turn the tables on us and say that we're the bad guys for like, you know, shoot the messenger, right? That's what it's about. Shoot the messenger, kill them, don't listen to the message. That's what it's about at the end, I think.
Yeah, I think they are evil. And I think that they've distracted everyone on these racist sniper hunts involving race so much. These parts of your identity that you cannot change and that have a significant influence in everything in your life. They've got everybody obsessed with it. And meanwhile, they are selling the labor of your children. Of future generations. They're creating a system of finance and commerce that is cashless and is controlled by a small cabal of bankers all over the world. The credit card company's main thrust is to turn Africa cashless. They want to control the economy of the entire continent. It's the same people that control the Fed, the IMF, the Bank of England, everybody. It's all,
you're right.
We're all slaves to them, and these distractions of race and identity are only that. It's like our gladiatorial games, I think, where we're supposed to look at while they destroy while they steal the labor of our children.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. I think they're using it in the sense that it's, we're going to round up here in a little bit. I'm going to let you go in a moment, but very interesting conversation, you know, to have this. And I think it's, We've seen that historically, that you can use ethnic tension that do arise primarily when you force different ethnicities, different religions, obviously, as well. As you see in Europe right now, the schisms are amazing. My country, where I'm from, Sweden, you know, I've seen this firsthand with the incoming migrants that have come. Islamic populations have increased. There's almost 20% non-European born populations in Sweden right now. I don't know how much you map or hear news and shit like that comes out of Sweden, but I mean, it's Sweden used to be a role model country that the rest of the world looked up to, you know.
Yeah.
Today it's gone to shit. It's one of the most unsafe places there is. Women gang rapes. There's rapes of women. There's bombs going off. There's gangs. There's violence and stuff you haven't seen before, right? So what I'm saying is that they say here diversity is our greatest strength. Then they open the borders, and then all these issues and problems happen, and it causes people to bicker and fight on a very the lower levels and busy with that, as opposed to looking at the top of the pyramid and us all asking who's doing this to us, and what is the reason for why they're doing this? Why are they distracting us to a certain extent in this capacity as well? Because most people won't have the time or even the energy at that point to like question who promoted the open borders, who opened our gates, right? That's what I want to talk about, not just blame the migrants because they're coming in. They're, to a certain extent, they're just doing what they I don't blame them. I mean, it's like, of course they live in a shitty situation, especially if someone has come and dropped bombs on them. This very same people we're talking about at the top, right? They come and drop bombs on them, and then they just like, all right, fuck this, let's go to a country that offers welfare instead.
What's that? Yeah. These poor people, someone dropped bombs all over them. We've got to help them out. Like, we dropped the bombs on them.
Well, they did. That's my point, right? I mean, we did. I didn't vote for it anyway. I didn't say, yeah, drop the bombs on them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, totally. You know, these pricks at the top do, and then they advocate for mass migration and open borders, and then you have massive conflict and economic upheaval. And again, I mean, and they come to countries that have, of course, very big welfare systems and social services and stuff like too, right? So they gets overloaded. But again, my point is, it goes back to that we do have there is a common enemy here that is trying to destabilize and create a shittier life for everybody. And I think it's important to see that, you know what I mean? And try to reach across as much as we can and say, hey, like we need to work together here because it's
the banks make money giving out loans. That's all they do. That's the only thing that makes them any money. And nothing is a bigger loan than war, than constant war, culture
that's
war.
True.
Actual wars, whatever you got. So they are. It is always their fault. It is always their fault, and every law that they write for themselves to follow is
is only helps them.
Yeah. So tell us, want you to plug some of your stuff here at the end, of course, but tell us what your game plan is now. I think your latest tweet I said, you said that you actually had got a smaller provider.
I got a family bank, four-generation family bank I'm going to try to bank at, and I talked to some Second Amendment groups for credit card processing. They're the groups that keep gun sales online, which is just one notch down from free speech. So I'm hoping we've got some of the same problems in common. I plan to get it up and running as soon as possible because I cannot live with the sword of Patreon constantly hanging over my head. Like, they've warned me way too many times. I cannot have $25,000 a month tied up on Patreon, and I can't sit and let people support a company they don't want to support. Like, I can't say the only way to support me is to go here. I cannot sit by and let guys like Stone Toss and Wormwood and all these Kiwi Farms and all these guys who've been deplatformed from engaging in commerce online, I can't just sit there and let them rot. It's morally wrong, and I have the ability to stop it. So that's what I'm going to do. We'll see if I get there. I don't know. But I'm trying. I'm trying real hard, and hopefully I'll get on back on track as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I mean, and it's going to be there is a real need for that, and I think it's going to be even a more need for that as we move forward, because a lot of people are going to be blocked and censored, especially going into 2020, I think, in the election and stuff like that, too. New Project 2, of course. I don't even know if you accept new sign-ups and stuff over there now, obviously.
I do. You can fill out the form. I got to go through when this is sorted. But my show is a comedy podcast. Very different than this. I only wanted to be a comedian from the start. It's thedickshow.com, dick.show. Patreon.com/thedickshow is the Patreon. But, oh, by the way, I got to thank you and your. I think I've been looking for these Dr. Phil episodes that I was on 10 years ago for 10 years. Because they were deleted off the internet because of a lawsuit, but I think somebody found them in Sweden. So I got.
Oh, you're kidding! Really? Yeah. Like old? Someone had recorded them on like VHS or something like that, or
yeah,
what?
They were in some kind of a media archive, and they uncovered them and posted them to the internet. So Viewing party tomorrow.
Nice. I heard that in passing. I think it was Ralph maybe talked about that or something. That was funny. Yeah. So you found them. That's great. So it's kind of being really, really bad news and some good news in the mix,
it's
I guess.
Good
so.
News. I'm eternally grateful to the people of Sweden.
Nice. Well, we got your back, man. Don't worry about it. All right. Well, thank you so much, Dick. I really appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on. Anything else you want to shill, go ahead and do that. Otherwise, have a great one. And thank you, man. So.
Have a great one, man.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Thank you. All right, guys, that's Dick Masterson. Thank you so much for joining us. Hope you enjoyed the show. We're going to be back with much more here soon. We have Zach Voorhees, the Google Insider, coming on Thursday. And I do believe we have Isabella Jarvonen Nilsson, a Swedish-Iranian nationalist who's an activist in Sweden, who's spoken out against a lot of the things that's happening in Sweden right now. She's been shut down from Twitter. She's had a lot of hardships as well because she started to organize events and stuff like that. So she's going to be on. I think I'm going to bring her on a little bit earlier on Thursday as well. So we have two shows coming up. Lana also has a 314 show coming up here. I forget the guests right now. We have a couple of shorter videos as well. We're going to get those up primarily first on redicemembers.com. Thank you to everyone out there for having a membership. If you haven't already, check it out, redicemembers.com. Exclusive material, Weekend Warrior exclusive videos as well, shorter, that we do only for members. Definitely check it out. It's well worth it. It's only about the price of a fancy cup of coffee per month. And of course, it helps us and it helps us continue to grow and fight, regardless of the censorship and the way that they're trying to block us from reaching new people and getting the message out. If you do like what we do, you can share the videos, share the links to the website, to our BitChute. We upload to Facebook video as well, number of different places where it goes up. If you do have a membership, you can download the 1080p versions from there as well. The only thing we ask is you respect the members' exclusive material, so that's still on the members' website, so that there is an incentive for people to sign up, because otherwise that will shoot us pretty badly in the foot, so thank you for that. But regardless, anything that's on redice.tv that's up for the public, that you can download from the members' website, if you please. Set up a YouTube channel, help us out, spread the word, share the links, upload it to your own channel, whatever. All right, guys, we'll be back with much more soon. Of course, Flashback Friday is coming up, Weekend Warrior as usual, but before that, as I said, a couple of shows as well in the pipeline, so look out for that. We'll see you guys soon. Take care.
The globalists are replacing you, and they are rejoicing. Join the true resistance. Red Ice TV. Watch the full show at redicemembers.com. Sign up now.
On October 17th, YouTube deleted our channel Red Ice TV, and a week later, Red Ice Media, our backup. We had no strikes at the time on either. YouTube never sent us an email, they did not get back to us regarding our appeal, and despite thousands of people writing Team YouTube, there has been zero communication from them after we were thrown off the video publisher's website. Luckily, nothing has been lost. Everything is still available on redice.tv and redicemembers.com, together with all our members' exclusive content. Make sure you get a subscription and support us. A lot of our recent videos and shows were automatically backed up on our BitChute channel. Subscribe to us there, bitchute.com/redicetv. More recent shows are embedded via BitChute on redice.tv, and we have always hosted our own MP3s on the website, the podcast version of the show. We have RSS feeds both for the radio show, the interviews, and a separate RSS feed for the videos posted on our website. Subscribe to both of these feeds to get the latest content, and this is a great way of getting a notification as well as soon as new shows and videos are available. We are in the process of uploading older shows to our BitChute channel now. We will go back and update shows on redice.tv that previously was linked back to our now censored YouTube channel. Subscribe to our BitChute channel, bitchute.com/redicetv. We are rebuilding our subscriber base with an already large audience over there. Join the 22,000 that have already subscribed to our BitChute channel. We are also uploading all our videos to our Facebook page, facebook.com/redicecreations. Just search for Red Ice on Facebook. When we live stream, we multi-stream both to Twitter and Facebook, but more importantly, dlive.tv/redicetv. Get the DLive app, follow us there, and you'll get notifications when we go live. They have super chats incorporated on the platform as well. Thousands have joined us on DLive already, and that's a great option for live streaming. If you want notifications for any of our content, make sure you join our Telegram group. Go to t.me/redicetv and enable notifications. You can get the Telegram app for your phone or your computer. It's nice and secure as well. Notifications goes on Telegram every time something new is available from Red Ice or other important updates that we have. In addition, make sure that you follow us on twitter.com/redicetv, gab.com/redicetv, minds.com/redicetv, and instagram.com/redicemedia. Help spread the word about our videos and shows. Share links, post it in comments, tell friends, family, coworkers. We lost access to 333,000 subscribers on YouTube, but we'll rebuild the audience on new and better platforms that don't censor and accepts politically diverse opinions. YouTube will be outcompeted by platforms that simply can uphold U.S. law, recognize the First Amendment, but also the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. The Supreme Court already ruled that there is no so-called hate speech exception to the First Amendment. Publishers like YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Google use the hate speech excuse, this clause, to silence dissident political views that they don't agree with, since they are biased political publishers that meddle in the election process and admittedly now has shown through leaked footage and documents that they want to sway public opinion by controlling what speech they allow or don't allow on their websites, even though they are granted special protection under the Communications Decency Act, Section 230, by the United States government. This means they should not be allowed to operate as a publisher like they do now. They should be a neutral platform, but time and time again, we have seen that they are not. All we ask is that these companies uphold United States law. Don't break the law by calling for violence, which we never did. And then these publishers should accept everything else that is protected under the First Amendment, since they are based in and were founded in the United States of America. They also receive corporate welfare, massive subsidies from the U.S. government. This is taxpayer money, in other words. Considering their special protection status granted to them by the government under Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, they should recognize free speech. And the U.S. Supreme Court have already ruled that so-called hate speech is free speech. redice.tv, redicemembers.com. Visit our websites. A lot of great new updates in the work for both websites. Thank you for watching, and thank you for your support.